Today's What Do You Think program is brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents, Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Currently, we are about 9 minutes past 10 o'clock. We have actually a two-part What Do You Think program today. Originally go that way, but it's the way it's shaping up. First, we're going to be hearing from Nathan from the Huron County Farm Service Agency office. Did I get that right?
You did, Craig, yes.
Okay, Nathan is here. We're going to be talking about some of the, they've got some loan programs that are being underutilized, I guess, in our area, which may be of value to some of our farming interests out there and some of the other things going on in the Farm Service Agency. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be back, Craig.
First of all, what type of programs are being underutilized? It seems like we're one of the biggest agricultural area counties in the state, and it seems like we should be on the forefront of just about anything that's being utilized.
And we really are with the direct payments program and with conservation programs. One of the programs that Huron County doesn't have as much activity as some other counties in the state of Michigan is a commodity loan program. There are a lot of reasons why that could be the case, but essentially what this program is you can take a loan against your commodity, and then when you sell the commodity, then you can pay the loan back. So really what it is, it's an option to extend your marketing season. So instead of having to sell your crops during harvest season, when often prices are a little bit lower, you can get the money in a loan form and then pay that back at a different time of the year as you market that crop.
Supply and demand type of thing. There's a glut of it at harvest time, so the supply is high and prices tend to go down a bit.
That's correct.
But you have to have a way of storing it as well.
That's right. We can do these loans with farm-stored commodities, or we can do them with what we call warehouse-stored commodities, basically for farmers who have their crops at the elevator. And essentially, the interest rate's 1.125%. So a lot of folks use it to, if they need to get some money in this tax year, they can get money for the commodity without actually having to sell it at a lower price than they might be able to get next year. Or if the commodity is sitting in a bin on the farm, you know, it's one of those ways that you can utilize that resource before actually having to lose interest in it. Back in the olden days, it was a price support program. So if the price of the commodity fell below the loan rate, you know, you could just redeem that crop through us and you would get the difference. So really it kind of goes along with the LDP program, and they work together to give farmers a little bit more leeway as they market their crops throughout the growing season.
And basically, are there usually in any type of loan programs, there's kind of restrictions and, you know, things, hurdles you have to cross. Is this a difficult program to get into, or is it pretty generous?
It's not. It's a really safe program for the taxpayers because we take a lien on the commodity that we're taking a loan against. So after we have a lien on the crop, you know, essentially, you know, when it's sold, we'll get our portion of the loan rate. Or if when a farmer loses interest in it, let's say they're feeding that commodity on a month-by-month basis, we can get paid back at set intervals. So it's a very safe program, practically a zero delinquency rate, and it's just really a great way for farmers to have some marketing flexibility when they consider what to do with their crops during this time of year.
And also gives them cash on hand for when they're trying to plan for next year's crops as opposed to wondering what you're going to get just before you want to plant, because you have to make arrangements to buy seed and all this other kind of stuff at this time of year, so you know you've got it.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of farmers will use that money to, you know, book in some operating expenses for the next year's growing season, purchasing inputs, fertilizer, seed, taking care of that during this time of the year. Sometimes there can be some incentives with getting that paid up front and taking care of it, you know, in the winter of the year.
Sometimes you get the 2011 rates that you don't get once it becomes 2012.
Right,
so
right.
There's always advantages. They'd like to know in those other businesses, too, that they've got business coming.
Right, right.
Now, is this something that has a cap on it, or as much crop as you want to put into it, you can do? I mean, it seems like, you know, we've got some pretty big farms around here.
Right. The only kind of negative aspect of it is our loan rates are lower than what you know, commodity prices are at right now. So for corn, you know, you can borrow like $1.95 per bushel, and that's really our cap for this program. So you can't borrow, unfortunately, you can't borrow $6 get $6 for every bushel of corn that you have stored, and then get that when you sell. The loan rates are set by the county loan rate, which is just, you know, one of the aspects of this program. But still, you know, when you're dealing with 20, 30, 40,000 bushels of stored commodities, and some of the ways that we're doing things now that maybe we weren't doing them in the past, you know, Huron County is seeing a lot more on-farm commodity storage, and that's providing an opportunity that maybe is the reason why people haven't thought about, you know, doing this in the past.
Well, and if you've already got it on the farm, you know, you're not paying someone else to store the crop, then you're only out the interest at the end of the thing.
Which is really low.
What crops are involved? Is it anything that you can get crop insurance for? Is it anything that you basically have a commodity price for? Is it for, because, you know, crops are very diversified these days.
Sure. Yeah, this program is specifically for what we'd call our program crops. So that would be things like corn and soybeans and wheat and oats and barley. Unfortunately, then it would exempt dry edible beans and some of the other commodities that are not currently part of our program.
But these are things you need to check in at your office with to see what qualifications there are, what crops are involved, and how to take part in it. Is it a long process? Is the paperwork extensive? Loans, when you go get them, you know, for a car or something, it's like, you know, when you get carpal tunnel syndrome and just signing your name by the end of this. Is this a long, complicated thing?
Yeah, luckily this is actually not a very involved process at all. It's just a couple of signatures. We file a lien on the commodity, and that's about it. You know, we consider this a recourse loan, so we have security with the commodity, and so you know, we feel, you know, perfectly secure as we make these loans, and it's we'd consider it a low documentation process. It doesn't require of course we'll do a lien search and make sure that everything's clear, that we'll have clear title to the grain, but ultimately it's quite an easy process compared to even going and getting a car loan or some other things that, as you say, involve, you know, initials on the bottom of every page and many signatures. This isn't bad at all.
And can you get information on the program online if you're interested, and just see if it fits your, because you're going to want to maybe crunch some numbers before you come in and sign up for something and then find out it doesn't exactly work the way you're intending it to.
Right, absolutely. One can always go to the Farm Service Agency's website. You can always call our office, 269-9549. Extension 2, and we can give you loan rates. We can give you more information about different provisions with storage or the quality of the grain. Of course, the grain has to be at a certain quality to be eligible for the program. And we more than willing to help farmers out as they consider, you know, how to market this crop, exactly what they want to do as far as getting prepared for the next growing season.
And what is the end date of the loan? Because you don't want this to run into next year. There's going to have to be an end date, you know, where you've got to sell it by now, because we want to balance the books on this year and go on to the next one.
Right. So, of course, whenever a person loses that beneficial interest in the commodity, they sell it. We'll get our portion from the loan, and then the farmer will get the difference. The other set deadline is then usually we close up this program by October 31st of next year. So it's really essentially like a nine-month loan term.
So the other crops are in already, and you could just be closing out your, because by October, a lot of these crops are, you're going to want to put them in that same bin.
Exactly. So, yeah, by the time we hit into next year, we're already back in harvest again. And so it does give you an entire, you know, kind of growing season of flexibility as you consider how to market your crops.
And like farmers have to do all the time, they have to weigh the pros and cons of selling now and will I get a better price later. That's a marketing thing and experience and all the other stuff that goes into farming.
Well, we're seeing some downward pressure on commodity prices, but we've been very fortunate the last couple of years to have had, you know, successful growing seasons by and large, good commodity prices, you know, by and large. And so it makes agriculture, it makes farming a little bit more fun when, you know, there is that element of, you know, folks are doing really well and things are going well. And it's really been a vibrant part of our local economy.
Okay. Other programs you want to let them know about?
Yeah, one of the questions I always get, people are always coming into the office and they want to know exactly, you know, how many acres in Huron County are under cultivation? What are you paying for conservation land? Well, luckily our computer systems are getting a little bit more updated. We talked about that the last time I was here. And now I'm finally able to get a really clear snapshot of where Huron County is at. And so for 2011, we're starting to get reports to see exactly where commodities were grown, what was grown, what increased, what decreased. And I was even surprised to find out that in Huron County in 2011, we had 386,426 acres in cultivation. Really a very large number by Michigan standards, really quite competitive even with the wider Midwest. And so that's something to be really, really quite proud of. We saw conservation acres declining quite a bit, you know, as commodity prices have gone up. We've seen participation in the Conservation Reserve Program become a little less than maybe it was several years ago, but
well,
we still...
It was kind of a hedge when prices were down that you were going to get something, and you usually put in properties that weren't going to produce a lot anyway, so...
Exactly, because you get that guaranteed payment every year, so you could set aside acres that maybe weren't as productive as other parts of your farm. So even with the declines, we went down a couple of thousand acres, but we're still at 16,000 acres in conservation set aside. And that meant $1.7 million in payments for Huron County landowners and farmers, which just roughly averaged out to about $105 an acre. So that's what we're paying in set aside. That's an average. We have some land that pays closer to $200. We have some that's as low as $60 an acre. But the average really for what the USDA is paying for conservation set aside acres is about $105 per acre.
And when we think of set aside acres, are we talking full acreage or are we talking like, you know, filter strips along rivers and by the ditches to try and keep some of the fertilizer and stuff out? Because as I understood these programs, a lot of what they were trying to do were conservation measures like that to keep what should be on the farm and not in the rivers and the bay.
That number would include both the filter strips and then the whole field. So every once in a while, they manage these acres nationwide. And they take a look at, you know, how many acres do we have in conservation? How many acres do we want in conservation? And then at times they'll offer those general signups, which allow us to take whole fields. For the last 2 years, we've had general signups and we've had pretty good participation with that. Right now, we really focus on filter strips, on specific conservation practices that are targeted at doing kind of the things like you said, you know, protecting waterways, reducing sediment runoff, reducing fertilizer and pesticide runoff. And those are really the higher rental rates. If farmers want to participate in those programs, you know, we've got great opportunities for people to put in filter strips on their farms, not taking out too much of their production. Really, in a lot of cases, we're seeing a lot of farmers with this larger equipment. They are putting filter strips in fields that have power lines running next to them because in the space between the ditch and the power line, they can't get their equipment in there. So by putting in a filter strip, they're protecting the field. They're getting a rental payment for it. And that works out pretty well because they can't get that equipment in there. It's, you know, it's getting quite large.
Yeah, well, that's efficiency. You make it larger, you make fewer passes, and get on to the next one.
And it's interesting how, you know, conservation is working with efficiency. The trends have been kind of against conservation for the last, you know, couple of years with high commodity prices. But, you know, as you see efficiencies being built into the system, farmers are recognizing, you know, what the best practices are for running their farm. And that is coming into alignment with some of the programs that we have. It's kind of an exciting time.
And farmers pay a lot for land around here these days. They want to make sure it doesn't blow off.
That's right. Well, and like I said, I mean, there's still some aspects, you know, farmers are buying pieces of land, and if there's a 20-acre parcel of it that's not as productive, and USDA is willing to go in and plant it to grass or trees or shrubs and then guarantee a payment of $130, $140 an acre, it works out. It pencils out for a lot of landowners and farmers.
Or a section of it that goes into a point or something and you can't get the machinery back there anyway. That seems like that would be a prime spot you'd want to back out at least enough where you can make the turnaround.
Yeah, well, and we have a lot of fields that are surrounded by, you know, wooded areas, and in some townships in Huron County, really the farmers are putting soybeans or dry beans in and they're finding that they're growing deer. And so, you know, and that's good during this time of year where we enjoy the, you know, the harvest of that crop as well. But ultimately, you know, in those fields, sometimes it just works out better to put in a nice grass filter strip or enroll the field in a conservation program. It works out really well.
Some of the other stats, I see you got a whole page full of them there.
Yeah, we grew 106,000 acres of corn in 2010. That went up to 118,000 acres, so we're seeing a lot of increase in corn. That
we
kind
do
of,
have commitments for the ethanol plant and that, so there's going to be corn in this county.
Absolutely. Well, traditionally, it's fun if you look back at the reports from even the early 1990s. You know, Huron County had a major presence with things like oats, a lot of oat acres in Huron County, a lot more alfalfa acres, and now we're seeing a lot of that turn to corn. That's a trend that we're seeing. Depending on how marketing goes, sugar beet acres are always really stable, but we're seeing some upward acreage in that. We went from 48,000 in 2010 to 51,000 acres in 2011.
That usually requires specialized equipment, and they're in it for the long haul.
That's right. Well, and then, of course, the sugar company maintains those acres just so they know exactly what, you know, will be needed for the coming year, and they manage those acres very efficiently. So that keeps that number usually pretty stable. Dry bean acres dropped from 85,000 acres in 2010 to 56,000 acres in 2011. So there was some downward pressure on dry beans. And then
does that cover all beans? Because, you know, there's black beans and kidney beans. And
For this case, yeah, I ended up putting all the kind of the dry edible beans together just because, you know, a couple growers out there who have adzuki beans. You know, we have a couple hundred acres of those in Huron County. Cranberries, we have, you know, a couple thousand acres of that. And really, the primary ones are black beans and navy beans, and there were about 25,000 acres of each of those this year. And then, you know, lastly, we had an increase in wheat acreage in 2011. So the nice thing about these reports is that, you know, we're getting a sense of where Huron County is at. We're seeing what commodities are being grown, and it's having a lot of that is impacted by the kind of things you were talking about. Ethanol. Ethanol is an opportunity that didn't exist in Huron County for Huron County farmers a couple years ago. Now that we have that, and now that the sugar company is doing well and is very stable and thriving, you know, that's an opportunity that's kept those acres solid, and so those acres haven't been committed to something else. So really, you know, the economic factors are influencing exactly what Huron County farmers are doing, and things that are happening across the country and around the globe really influence these farmers. And we have some of the most knowledgeable farmers with some of the most advanced equipment, and we're really following nationwide trends. It's very interesting to see.
It used to be a tractor and a plow, and now you've got GPS and two-way communications and watching your place on a satellite. And oh, my gosh.
Well, and I'll tell you, just with all the issues that have been coming up, you know, they were talking about putting the farm bill into the super committee. You know, we've had a lot of questions coming into the office from folks who were really concerned about Department of Labor changing regulations on farm labor.
Mm-hmm. Especially the kids.
Especially for the young kids. And, you know, some of the old timers will come in and say that, you know, they learned to drive, you know, tractor on an old Ford, you know, that they, the first tractor that was ever on their farm. And now, of course, we have very large equipment. So none of these answers are very easy, but whatever topics are happening globally and nationally, Huron County is affected. We're really in the current, which is, you know, a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to have access to global markets, to have entities and banks and elevators and chemical and fertilizer companies that are really at the forefront of what's going on nationally.
Terrific. Other things you wanted to talk about this morning?
Really, the last thing was ballots were mailed on November 4th for the county committee election, so farmers in the western third of Huron County would have received their ballots. We've received a lot back. We have five candidates this year: Corey Eschker, Clay Kelterborn, Robert Crone, Robert Haig, and Joel Fritz. So if any farmers over in the western portion of Huron County haven't returned their ballots yet, they have until December 5th. So we'll be counting ballots on December 8th, and we'll be seeing who the new member of our county committee will be.
And that's your representative through the office you have and all the way on up to the federal government. So you've got a little bit of a voice there as to what's going on in all these programs.
Absolutely. And reports that we send up and discussions that happen in our local meetings go to our state office. They get forward to our national office, and it makes a significant difference as Congress is looking at writing another farm bill. And as we look at seeing, you know, exactly where farm policy is going to go in the next couple of years for the United States farmer.
And if people have questions, your number is?
I'm at the office, 989-269-9549.
Either through the end of business today or next Monday when you're back in the office, I assume.
That
we do have a holiday coming.
We do have a holiday, which we're all looking forward to. Thanksgiving is a real kind of farmer-centric holiday where a lot of folks get a chance to think about the people who produce their food, so it's quite good for everybody.
Thanks for being with us, and I hope people take advantage of the programs that are available and may not be utilized as much as they could in our area.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for being with us. And we'll be back with a second set of guests for our What Do You Think program in 60 seconds.
When you're looking for something important to your health and well-being like Blue Cross Blue Shield health insurance for yourself or your employees, are you willing to put your trust into someone on the other end of an 800 phone number? Or what about that click of a mouse? Are you willing to trust these people that you don't even know? Here's a much better idea. Contact one of your Huron County Farm Bureau insurance agents. They grew up in your neighborhood. You share the same zip codes. They probably even know your family. These are the people you should put your trust in. When you're insured through one of your Huron County Farm Bureau insurance agents, you can rest easy knowing that they'll be there today, tomorrow, and always to answer questions and make adjustments as families grow and your needs change. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Contact one of your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer or Deb McBride in Elkton, Deb Croswick in Unionville, Casey Yan in Harbor Beach or Ubley, or Tim Fritz in Bad Axe.
We are back, and we are changing gears right now, and we're going to be talking about Huron County's Toys for Tots program. In the studio, we have Kelly Levine and Janice Pulaski, and we're going to be talking about the program. We've had it for a number of years, and Kelly, you're kind of spearheading it this year. They threw the Toys for Tots ball at you, and you're running with it, so there's a lot of background to the program, a lot of years of Toys for Tots, and in Huron County as well.
Yes, we are hoping Christmas 2011 is the best yet that it's been for the Toys for Tots program. This year, I'm a new coordinator, and I have teamed up with the Huron County Sheriff's Office, and we are hoping to, make the program more efficient and hopefully serve as many people as we possibly can. The motto for Toys for Tots is every child deserves a little Christmas, and that's what we're hoping to bring to Huron County. We don't want to leave any child out.
So you're right now in the collection process?
Yes, we are. Yep.
And eventually you'll have the gift wrapping process and delivery process, and in the intermedium there, you're going to need to have people to contact you as to which kids are going to need toys to have a good Christmas this year. So there's a lot of things on your plate this time of year.
Yes, there is. Our biggest thing right now is getting the toy donations in and monetary donations. We are having the Battle of the Bars started. It kicked off the end of October, and there are numerous bars in Huron County that has agreed to raise money for the Huron County Toys for Tots program.
They have like canisters there or particular programs that they do themselves?
What they're doing is they're selling the paper trains for a dollar, or they're collecting donations. Right now, Farmer's Tavern in Ruth is in the lead.
Trying to get a little competition going there.
Yeah, a little friendly competition.
I see how you're working there.
And they have raised over $500, so if every bar can do that that's involved, that would just be wonderful.
The monetary donations help you in getting things that help fill the gifts out.
And also,
you got to buy wrapping paper and other kinds of things that are not necessarily what people think of when giving for Toys for Tots.
We've actually had a women's group donate a wrapping station this year. The Battle of the Bars will end December 24th, and at the end of that, we will have a traveling trophy that we will leave to display at the bars the whole year, and then we'll pick it up when the next battle begins.
So you're planning long-term on these things.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully, if it all works out, I'll be doing it for numerous years.
Now, if people want to contribute, what kind of toys are you looking for? I mean, that's, you know, because you can go and get yourself a great big stuffed animal and it'll fill up the whole box, and that only takes care of one kid. Are you looking for toys of a certain value so you're kind of give every kid, you know, isn't getting an Xbox and the next one is getting a
right.
box of crayons?
What our plan is, we're hoping to keep it around the $30 range, mm-hmm. and then go anywhere down to stocking stuffers. I guess we need toys anywhere from 0 to 17. That's what the program has stretched the age a little bit this year. because it used to end at 14, but we wanted to include high school students also.
Do you find you get more boys than girls toys? Is there anything in particular that you people maybe need to shop for so you don't end up with trying to give a boy a Barbie doll?
Right. What we see now is there's a lot of, Hot Wheels stuff coming in. Mm-hmm. So we could use more dolls and that kind of infant stuff.
At this point, you need the girls' types of toys.
Yep.
Well, that's being sexist, and I don't want to go there. But the traditional...
Right.
Toys that you give to a young lady.
And along with those toys, they are not to be wrapped.
Because, you have to see what's
yes,
in there.
Yes, and so do the people that are coming to see the toys to pick them out for their family. They have to see what they're getting. So they will be wrapped after they pick them out.
And I don't think you take, like, homemade stuff because you're looking for stuff that you know has passed federal inspections for,
correct.
You know, the paint isn't got lead in it, that
right,
type of thing. Because
right.
I know people are handy and they can, you know, make little wooden toys and stuff, and they're really, you know, nice stuff because, you
sure.
know, they're homemade and they have that special touch to them. But you have
to look at safety.
We have numerous drop box locations.
Those are the big boxes you find in the store
yes.
for an actual gift.
Yep. This year we have 27 drop spot locations.
27 in all of... That's just here on county?
Just here on county.
That's a lot of places around there.
We try to increase it from what it was last year because we wanted to make it more convenient for people to donate. So we were hoping to get a drop box in every city.
And do you have one in every city? Are there places where you're a little thin and you maybe some
today's
of the,
What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local here.
Step up.
It would kind of be nice to get another spot maybe in Pigeon or Ubly even. If they would like to be a drop spot location, they can contact me at the sheriff's office at 989-269-6500. And I'm there Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. Or they can contact Matt Neumeyer at the Port Austin State Bank.
And it's basically all you have to do is allow somebody to put the box in there and maybe a little poster to say it's here at the front door, mm-hmm. and then people can, because you'll come collect it, all they have to
yes.
do is basically allow it to be there.
You can see the boxes. They're big white boxes. It says Toys for Tots on them in red. These boxes, like Kelly said, are all over the county. We've actually been going into these places and picking up the toys so they're not staying in there. And we take them, and Kelly actually has a spot designated to fill all the boxes with toys to get them ready for the big day. So even with the drop cans, right, Kelly, they're getting in there if they need to be emptied out, and so they're not just sitting out.
We have many spots around the county also that maybe wouldn't be the best spot for a drop box, so we have put in a monetary donation can, and people can leave donations in those cans, and we will clean those out, and we'll leave those out till Christmas also.
And you'll just go to a store and pick out what you need to fill out all these stockings
mm-hmm.
and all
yes,
the, all the
yep.
gifts. And are we meeting the need? I mean, do you find every year, I know it's your first year, but you must have been given some background on the program. Are there more kids out there in need than we're able to help, or do we try to get at least something to everybody?
Our applications are up this year. I'm hoping not to turn away too many people, those people that really need it. I know the number's growing, probably with the economy. Mm-hmm.
Because often there's more than one kid in a household. I mean, you
right.
have someone come in, there could be 3-4 kids that are going to be in need of a Christmas.
Well, we have applications that are at the sheriff's office, and if anybody feels that they are in need for holiday assistance, they can fill those out. And with the toys we get and the donations, we will try to serve as many people in Huron County that we can.
And you basically, is it a long form? Is there income guidelines? Or just basically in need and, you know, if you need it, you know, you're not going to be...
The application has changed from in the past. It has gotten a little bit longer. and it'll probably continue to change as I work with the program. What I'm asking for is the parents or guardians of the children bring in their ID and also the birth certificates of the children that they're applying for. And at that time, they'll fill out the application. Mm-hmm. And I have a committee of a few people that will go over those applications. And there is no, I guess, income level that we are looking at. It's just the status of how in need they are.
Because you can have, you know, an income that would maybe get another family by, but if you've got 5-6 kids, you're not getting by.
Right.
Exactly.
Every situation is different, and that's what we're going to take into account. We're going to take applications till December 10th at 4 p.m., and we will start calling people and letting them know whether they've been accepted for the program after those days, after the 10th. Our distribution is going to be December 17th. Any gifts or monetary donations we do receive after that day will go toward next year's campaign.
So basically on that 17th, which is a Saturday, that's the day they can come pick what they would like for their child to receive on Christmas, and then you folks will go through the wrapping process.
Correct.
And then they can pick it up at a later time, or they get them that day?
Nope, they'll do it that day. Everything will be done that day. We're trying to make the program a little bit more convenient for everybody.
Then they've got to find a place to keep it hidden for a week and a half until the kids are ready for Christmas.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to announce that we are having a benefit pasta buffet at the Pasta House in Kindy on Tuesday, November 29th. We're asking that those people that would like to be part of that from 4 to 7 p.m., would bring a $10 donation or a $10 toy for an adult, is the cost for an adult. A $5 donation or a $5 stocking stuffer is what we're asking for children 10 and under to bring in. Pasta House has agreed to donate all proceeds to our foundation at no cost to the Huron County Toys for Tots. They are going to include in their buffet 3 pasta sauces, pasta, 3 salads, bread and butter, and beverages.
And, you know, you did it on the 29th. That's about the time nobody has any turkey left, so they'll be hungry again.
Hopefully everyone's sick of turkey and they come out for the pasta buffet.
Mm-hmm. As long as you don't have turkey on the pasta, they'll be happy.
Our motto for Toys for Tots is every child deserves a little Christmas, and that's what we're hoping to do for Huron County. We don't want to leave anybody that maybe can't celebrate Christmas the same way our family can. We don't want to see anybody left out.
And we've kind of, this has started off, you know, as the Marine Corps doing this, but locally we have local people doing this because we want to make sure that we can utilize the good name of the program and all the stuff they have that helps you out, like the boxes that are printed with everything on there. So it cuts down on what you have to do, but it's still, if they know when they're contributing, it's a good program that's been around for years.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And if people have questions, they can contact you at the sheriff's office.
Yep.
You work there business hour days.
Yes,
you're not
do.
There 24 hours. You know,
no.
Only the people on the third floor are there 24 hours.
But there is an answering machine if they do call on an off time that we're not there. They can just leave a message.
Okay.
So.
And just make sure they mention it's for Toys for Tots, and you'll know exactly what they're looking for, so when you call, you're not hunting for data or anything, you got it right there.
People can also go on our website. There is some information on there.
Mm-hmm.
It is www.toysfortots.org, and you'll just have to follow the link to our local website.
You go through Michigan to the city or town or county, and you'll get Huron County Bad Axe, and click on that, and they've got
Correct.
All the information that you've got posted.
Yep, and there's a spot on there also to make online donations for people who would rather not come into the sheriff's office or go to the drop spot locations.
Well, there aren't people who are afraid to go into the sheriff's office, are there?
Well,
some are.
Okay, and again, this is a thing that we've done in Huron County for years. We're trying to expand it because you're seeing a bigger need this year.
Yes, yep, the need is growing. Like I said, the applications are up. I just can't believe how many applications we have received.
Yeah.
They're still just pouring in.
How many applications do you think that we get in a day?
probably maybe 8 to 10.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
We see the big farms and the prosperous big houses and stuff, but we don't realize how some people are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas is a time every kid should enjoy, and it shouldn't be something that the parents have to, you know, feel bad about, that, you know, they couldn't give them the Christmas maybe they had as kids. So I think you guys are doing a terrific job here. It's a
Thank
wonderful
you.
Thing
Thank
to
you.
Do. Again, if they want information, sheriff's number is 269-6500.
Correct.
And hopefully people who are in need will contact you. And those who can help will do the same. Toys for Tots in Huron County. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Thank
Great.
You.
Our guests on the program have been Kelly Levine and Janice Pulaski. We've been talking about Toys for Tots. Again, 269-6500. If you either have a family that needs help, or if you're able to donate or just want to participate, I'm sure they can always use people to help around just doing the odds and end things that have to be done in a big program like this. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on the latest in the news.
Today's What Do You Think program was brought to you by your local Huron County Farm Bureau agents. Bill Weitzel in Pigeon, Corey Vollmer and Deb McBride in Elkton, Casey Yon in Harbor Beach or Ubley, Deb Croswick in Unionville, and Tim Fritz in Bad Axe. Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.